Wiggly Superstar. Do you think you're what they say you are? Wiggly Superstar. Do you think you're what they say you are?
It's showtime with Ricky Lee. Thank you for joining me here on 101.5 Huntley Community Radio. You can always stream our shows at huntleyradio.com. There is a certain art to putting on a one-person show. You can look at examples like Lily Tomlin's The Search for Signs of Intelligent Life in the Universe and John Leguizamo's Mambo Mouth for how completely entertaining the art form can be. I recently had the opportunity to see The Princess Strikes Back, One Woman's Search for the Space Cowboy of Her Dreams, by writer-performer Victoria Montalbano, and I was floored with how good it was. So, I asked Victoria to join me today to talk about this fantastic mix of comedy and drama. We'll also let you know how you can catch upcoming performances in January and February at the Bughouse Theater in Chicago. Victoria, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, for those listening, how would you describe The Princess Strikes Back? How would you describe that to somebody who's never seen it, never heard of it?
Well, it is a one-woman show about how my childhood crush on Han Solo has affected the rest of my dating life.
And so Han Solo, when did Han Solo become your dream man?
I was 13 when I saw the Star Wars trilogy for the first time. So obviously that's a time in our lives when we are feeling certain feelings for the first time. And so I would say around then, although I did not realize that Han Solo was like my dream man, the person I been basing all of my future crushes and relationships on until much later on in life. I was probably like in my 20s when I realized like, oh, it all stems from Han Solo.
Yes, life makes sense in the rearview mirror sometimes.
Exactly.
So tell me, what gave you the idea to develop a one-person show?
Well, I had been doing storytelling, short form storytelling, like you would hear on The Moth, on NPR, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a pretty robust storytelling community here in Chicago. And so I was doing short 5 to 10 minute stories, just kind of as a thing to do, a way to sort of figure out how to write for myself and things like that. And I realized I really enjoyed it. And as an actor my entire life, I found a way, I sort of told myself, well, this is how I can develop a solo show, is through storytelling. It's something I enjoy and I'm good at. And I can really do this and put some stories together and create a whole show.
Now, had you been a fan of one-person shows before, or was this just something that popped into your head? I've got this idea. This is how I'm going to do it.
I was a fan of certain one-person shows. I certainly wasn't like a connoisseur of them, but I had seen a few, as one does when you're in theater your entire life, you end up seeing some. I'm actually more of a fan of stand-up comedy, but I don't enjoy doing stand-up comedy myself. But there is a stand-up I really enjoy named Mike Birbiglia, who does these like one-person shows that he develops through stand-up. And when I saw one of his shows for the first time, I just stumbled upon it on Netflix. I was like, oh, that, I want to do that. He's funny, but he's telling a long-form story, and there are moments in here that are really poignant and meaningful, even though the show is really wall-to-wall jokes as well. So I sort of set out to do that. And I very much, I feel like with one-person shows, especially from women of a certain age, that there's a little bit of a stigma to them, being like a woman in my late 30s talking about dating and men, that there's sort of an idea people have in their heads when they hear that of like, oh, this is going to be like this bitter middle-aged woman in all black with dark lipstick who's like going to be just railing about men, and I did not want to be that.
So what so is yes. it that people do get when they come to your show? That's what they don't get. What right. do they get?
Well, they will get a very fun hour of me talking about my past relationships and my love of Star Wars and the Star Wars universe. And I think they'll get some idea. There's some moments of vulnerability that I think people see. But they'll see me wearing Princess Leia's gold bikini, as opposed to an all black ensemble, and just sort of a little bit of like poking fun at who we were as kids and young adults when we were trying to kind of figure out what we were doing, what we wanted, taking a very humorous look at that.
Now, you mentioned Princess Leia's bikini.
Yes.
You have this great recreation of the actual costume, uh-huh. and that was done by Emily Nelson, correct?
Yes.
And so how did that come about? How did you come about saying, okay, I need this costume. How do I get one made?
So I knew from the start when I had the idea for the show that I wanted to wear that costume at some point. And it became a really big thing when I would talk about my ideas for the show before I even had the full thing written. I would talk about what I wanted to do and people would be like, oh, that sounds funny. That sounds fun. And then I'd be like, oh, and I'm definitely going to wear Princess Leia's gold bikini at some point. And they would be like, oh my God, amazing. And so I was like, okay, well, I have to have this bikini now. It's apparently a big draw. And so Emily was a costume designer who I'd worked with back in 2016. And I will say, as a plus size woman working in non-union theater, it is pretty hard to find a costume designer who you love working with, who understands how to dress you. And when she costume designed a production of Twelfth Night I was in, and I honestly had never felt more beautiful than in the clothes she put me in. So I tracked her down and sort of like relentlessly sent her emails until she was like, sure, I'll do it.
And was it a collaborative venture or did you just say, this is what I want, go for it?
It was fairly collaborative because I sort of explained to her that I would be wearing it, but that I needed to have a dress. She also helped make the dress that I wear through most of the show that goes over it and made it very easy to kind of like snap on. And so I explained everything to her and just sort of sent her off, and she knew the costume. It's a famous costume.
Right.
So as she really did a lot of it on her own. We had like one meeting, and this was during COVID. So I had to like measure myself and send her my measurements. And we were on a tight budget, so it couldn't be built from scratch. So she like built it out of a bra and some fabric and some undershorts.
Well, I tell you, from the audience, it just looks very striking. I mean, it really works.
It's fantastic. Yeah. It really does. Yeah.
So now tell me, you have this idea for the show. You've seen a gentleman on Netflix that, okay, this is kind of how I want to format it. How did you go about developing it? What is the first step for making a one-person show?
For me, the first step is just telling the stories that are in it. So there are four really, but it started with three kind of big stories that tie the thing together. And so once I had the idea, I kind of knew, okay, I'm going to focus on these relationships or crushes, whatever it was, but these relationships I'd had. And I just wrote those stories and would take those out to storytelling events and just drilled them. And every time I would go, I would record myself, listen back and rewrite and go out and do it again. So I was really, before I had the whole script put together, the stories that make it up, I was very much honing a little bit at a time. Kind of the way a stand-up would go work out material, I just did it with storytelling.
And did you like physically write it out on the computer or on paper or anything? Or do you do it in your head and then play with it?
I do physically write it out. I write it out like it's an essay on a computer. And I don't necessarily stick to the pages word for word when I am performing them, when I'm first developing them. I allow myself a little freedom. And I think that comes from a background as a performer, that if something pops into my head while I'm saying it that I think is funny or works, I will say it. I don't necessarily stick to the script I've written, but I do write out a script. And not every storyteller works that way. But that's what works for me, at least for now. If I don't have that, I will just go off on tangents and you will never get a full complete story from me. So
I think Robin Williams was the king of going out on tangents, where he would just go in bizarre ways, but he always managed to bring it back full circle somehow.
Yeah, I'm no Robin Williams. I would never bring it back. I need it written out. At least for now, that's how I work.
Now, from the point that you thought of this idea, you had it in your head, how long did it take you to develop the script, to develop the show, to where it is now?
About 2 years. It was about 2 years from when I had the idea and wrote the first story that I wrote for it. From then until the world premiere in 2021 was 2 years. So I spent, I would say, almost a year just workshopping the stories and putting the first draft of the script together. And then I was supposed to have not exactly a workshop, but there used to be a like long form storytelling event where I got a date at that event and I was going to use it to just basically read the first draft. So very, very low stakes, just let's hear this whole thing out loud. That was scheduled in March of 2020. So that didn't happen. So I had the first draft of the script and I put it away for a while at the start of the pandemic, because sort of like we all did at the beginning, we're like, well, in a few months, we'll be back at it. And once it became clear that that wasn't going to be the case, I just forced my friends to listen to me do the whole thing over Zoom. So that's how I originally workshopped it. A lot of my friends were at one time performers and are no longer, and they were willing to like just set up a Zoom and let me basically do the show for them one-on-one. And so they would give me some notes and feedback and I would interpret it. And then I then started working with a coach. There's a wonderful solo show coach in Chicago named Arlene Malinowski. And I had taken a class with her and I did some one-on-one coaching with her on the script. And that's what really helped me get it a little bit more cohesive and a little bit more of like a show where all kind of the vulnerable moments that are in the show, most of them kind of came from her poking and saying, we need this here, we need this here. And that's what really made it more of like a show and not just stories strung together. So, yeah.
You're listening to It's Showtime with Ricky Lee on 101.5 Huntley Community Radio. You can always stream episodes at huntleyradio.com. Today, I'm joined by Victoria Montalbano, and we are discussing her spectacularly entertaining one-woman show, The Princess Strikes Back, one woman's search for the space cowboy of her dreams. It's funny. It's endearing. It makes you think. It makes you feel. It is just great entertainment. You can next catch The Princess Strikes Back on January 8th and February 12th at the Bug House Theater in downtown Chicago. For information on the show, visit victorianotvicky.com. That interesting URL again is victorianotvicky.com. Now, Victoria, to develop this, you worked with a coach. You also worked mm-hmm. with a director, I believe.
I did,
What was that process like?
So it's much more collaborative than your average theater rehearsal process. And so my director, Vincent, is someone I know from the storytelling community. So he was a storyteller and storytelling producer with a background in theater and directing. And so I asked him to direct the show mainly because I needed someone who I knew that I could trust, that I knew sort of understood me and my sense of humor. And I had done his storytelling show for a while. It's not around anymore. It's the pandemic sort of killed it. But he used to run a storytelling show called Universal Sound, which I did very often. And we just always worked really well together. And that was what I needed, really. I didn't need, not, he's a wonderful director, but I did not need like some fabulous visionary director. What I needed was someone who I could trust, because I'm a bit of a control freak, and having written this entirely myself and it being very personal, I knew I had to be able to let go and put it in someone else's hands. So it had to be someone that I knew well and trusted. So that was Vinny. And so we really rehearsed it the same way you would rehearse a play. You know, we broke it down into smaller portions, the rehearsed, you know, staged it, all of that. And there was a bit of like back and forth on the script a little bit. He suggested a few things. So some little things got worked out. And he also, I did do a virtual staged reading of the show with a Q&A, the way you would with a new work, except we had to do it completely virtually. So we did that together. And then once we were vaccinated and able to rehearse in person, we were able to rehearse just the way you would rehearse a play.
Now, you mentioned that this contains both a lot of comedy, but also some mm-hmm. poignant moments. How did you develop that balance? What is the recipe for that?
Ooh, for me, it was... How it worked for me was it was all comedy, except for like I always, the ending always kind of stayed. I always knew where I was going. And so there was always like a couple of moments of vulnerability. But I was sort of, every story in between was very much like just jokes, just jokes, just jokes. And when I worked with my coach, Arlene, she really got me to dig in and say, after each story, after like each man I talked about, what did you learn from that? And that question really helped me kind of move forward. Her main note was like, let's see what you're talking and making jokes about all these men and stuff, but put it back on you. What did you learn from each story? What did you learn from each thing that's happening here? How does that affect you? And so asking that question of myself when I went back and did my next rewrite was how I worked that in. So I don't know if that really answers your question about the balance, but for me, it has to be like all comedy first. Let's just get the surface and then dig in.
Now, you mentioned that when you started this, it had three relationships that you talked about, but it ended up with four.
Yes.
So explain how that, how you added one more. What was the process there?
So I had developed this show talking about three different men who were like the three different sort of Han Solo types that I had either had crushes on or dated or whatever. And one of the things that my coach mentioned on my rewrite was like, I had started the show in this place where I had just ended a relationship, my only like actual real adult relationship I'd ever had in my early 20s. And I had just sort of like zoomed past it in the original. I was like, this is just the inciting incident. We don't need to know that much about it. You know, we can just, this is just what gets me to the next thing. And the note I got was like, no, we really need to hear about that. So it's actually the first relationship I talk about was the one that was not really in the original script. It was mentioned, but just sort of brushed past. And my ex-boyfriend who I talk about in the show, I relate him to being C-3PO, the robot, and I am R2-D2, the robot's friend. They're like the duo of droids in Star Wars. And that was actually a thing we used to sort of joke around that like we were those two and it was a thing. We were in a show together. That's how we met. And we would just sort of like go around and say like, oh, what Star Wars characters are all these, all of our castmates? And we had just named ourselves C-3PO and R2-D2. And I was like, you know what? That's actually pretty emblematic of why that relationship ended and why it didn't work, is because we just fundamentally disagreed on some things and fundamentally weren't going to work out. And so that sort of became how I put that relationship in. And it really worked out to like propel the show forward. So that's how that ended up.
You know, one of the things that I think is so wonderful about your show is that it's based in this Star Wars universe, but you don't have to know Star Wars to enjoy your show. You manage to explain the plot points in enough detail that the audience can just follow right along, even if they haven't seen the movie. So it's really a well-written, well-performed show.
Thank you. That was very important to me, was that you didn't have to be a Star Wars fan to enjoy it. But if you are, there will be some little fun jokes in there just for you. But yeah, that was sort of my rule, became like, okay, I'm going to have to explain some things about Star Wars. So anything like related to the Star Wars universe can be in here as long as I have like a funny or entertaining way to explain it.
Yes. So now tell me a little bit about your background as a performer. I think you have background in improv as an actress. Give us a little rundown on where Victoria got her start.
Sure. Well, I was like a theater kid growing up. That was my whole thing. I was, you know, one of those annoying teenagers at Denny's and like full cast makeup, you know. So I, it was just the thing I always did. And then I went to college for it. And so I have a degree in theater. So I did a lot of like very serious acting, Shakespeare, that sort of thing. I still love doing Shakespeare. And then I moved to Chicago to do improv. And sort of, I wasn't like a comedy nerd. A lot of people come to Chicago to do improv were like comedy nerds.
Right.
Like hardcore, seen every season of SNL, like everything. That was not me. It was just sort of the thing that I could do. And I sort of say this in the show too. I was not like the star student of my college theater program. I sort of like barely skated by with my theater degree from a prestigious theater school. And so, improv was something I could do. And like, there are people that I went to school with who are like amazing actors that are currently like very famous actors that, can't do improv. And so I was like, I could do, this is my way in. I'm not going to be a Broadway star, but I can do improv. And so that's why I came here. And then I was broke and couldn't afford improv classes. So I sort of just started doing Chicago theater. And I was in Tony and Tina's Wedding when I first moved to Chicago, which is an interactive show. I booked it six months after I moved here. And so I was sort of like, you know, I can hold off on the improv classes because I'm getting paid to do improv in this show. And so let me just do this for a while. And then started just auditioning for Chicago Storefront Theater, which is so robust here and so wonderful, and just did everything. I did some comedy, I did sketch shows, and I eventually did go back and I went through the IO Theaters Training Program. And I was on a team there for like a hot second. And just did everything, comedy, drama, Shakespeare, whatever you can put up in a tiny little black box theater or a church basement or anything like that, I did. I did Shaw, I did, you know, everything. And yeah, just sort of fell into storytelling when I sort of hit a rut in theater. I just wasn't getting cast as often and was a little bit frustrated, as happens to all of us who are performers. And so kind of fell into storytelling from there.
Now, one thing that you mentioned early on is that you consider yourself a plus size actress.
Yes.
And that is a title that you seem to carry with pride. You hold yourself very confident on stage in this very revealing costume.
Yes.
And I just think that that is such a wonderful message to other women, to hold, or other people, to just hold yourself with pride. And so I just wanted to mention how impressive that is, and how important I think it is in your act.
Thank you. I will say about that, I, as far as like carrying that plus size label with pride, I guess, is just that It's just who I am. Yeah. I'm not ever, I've never been thin since puberty, really. So even if I like got into great shape and everything, I would still be plus size. Cause I have, there were times where I was like working out all the time, crazy, super dieting, all of that. And I was still plus size. So as far as carrying that, I'm glad that people can see me and look up to that, but I hope at some point we'll get to a place where we're just people. Yeah. And it's just not that big a deal. This is just who I am. And I have no, like, I don't know. I have no like tricks or tips for like being confident other than to just live in your body. And I'll be 39 next month. So I've lived in my body for a very long time. That's the only way to get that confidence. So, and just understand that we're all people. Everyone's a different size. It doesn't, it's just who we are, you know?
Yeah, great, great message. Very strong. You've been listening to It's Showtime with Ricky Lee on 101.5 Huntley Community Radio. Today, my guest has been the incredibly talented writer-performer, Victoria Montalbano. We've been talking about her phenomenal one-woman show, The Princess Strikes Back. One woman's search for the space cowboy of her dreams. You can next see this witty, endearing, all-around great show at the Bug House Theater in Chicago on January 8th and again on February 12th. Both shows are at 5 p.m. Make it a point to see this show. You will thank me. For information on the show and future performances, check in regularly at victorianotvicky.com. Victoria, thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we look forward to seeing you in the spotlight.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.